Welcome to the Institute of Leadership and Management's weekly news roundup podcast, where we take a critical look at some topical developments from the past few days with a leadership and management theme. I'm business and finance journalist Matt Packer, and in this podcast we'll be covering stories from the week of the 14th of May, including two select committees savage Carillion's rotten culture, protesters allege prison-like working conditions at Amazon, the East Coast mainline goes back into government control, and a senior Bank of England figure sparks fury by likening the UK economy to the menopause. Joining me to analyse these developments is the Institute's Head of Research, Policy and Standards, Kate Cooper. Hello there, Kate.
Hello, Matt.
Okay, in our first story, two parliamentary select committees have poured scorn on the management culture at failed infrastructure giant Carillion. In a powerful joint report of the 16th of May, the Work and Pensions Committee and Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy Committee described the firm's culture as rotten and said that its leaders had shown suppliers utter contempt. The report also cited a series of accounting tricks that had enabled the firm to conceal its massive debt. However, CBI Director General Josh Hardy took issue with the report's strident tone, accusing the committees of indulging in knee-jerk soundbites and painting an inaccurate picture of UK business as greedy and reckless. Does Hardy have a point, or was the report's attacking tone appropriate?
The more we hear about what went on at Carillion, the more indefensible it becomes. And if we're to describe culture as the way we do things, the way Carillion did things was obviously not right. And ultimately, the consequence was they failed. So it's undoubtedly right that they're being censured. I think we have to question how helpful it is to be overly critical in this way. Who are we serving? Maybe it's political point scoring here. Yeah. I don't think it's a comment on the whole corporate sector. To me, the interesting thing that might come out of this is to question the over-reliance of so many corporates and public sector organisations too on the Big Four. I was talking to a financial services consultant recently who said it's very difficult for small or independent consultants and trainers to get work because once you're with EY or Pricewaterhouse, it's giving it a sort of quality stamp that the training is going to be really good.
Yeah, so I mean, it feels very much like a kind of a closed club, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think any disruptor or challenger to these four is great. It's really freeing up the market.
Okay, that's excellent. All right, in our second story, the GMB union and some sister unions from Europe protested outside an Amazon corporate event at Old Trafford this week, accusing the firm of operating prison-like working conditions. Their complaints stemmed from a recent expose by undercover author James Bloodworth, who got himself hired as a picker in a UK Amazon warehouse. According to Bloodworth, he found evidence that colleagues were peeing into water bottles because they were too rushed to take proper bathroom breaks. GMB National Officer Mick Ricks said that Amazon should be treating staff with respect, not like robots. Now, I guess this ties back to the DPD story from last week's podcast and shows what can happen when metrics take precedence over basic common sense.
I think also they're in for a bit of a surprise. Now we're seeing unemployment falling to record levels. There is going to be a plethora of choice for many people in these sorts of industries. Mm-hmm. And they're going to go where they're treated properly.
Yes.
And with these household names like Amazon, surely they must know how under scrutiny they are. And great to this, you know, undercover reporter going in and actually finding out firsthand what was going on. And they should be so careful about how they treat their staff. I can't believe that they think that this is all right, or they're not so aware of the importance of ethical treatment of people that work for you.
And providing basic amenities.
Well, it seems that people are under such time pressure to meet their targets that they're not even able to take comfort breaks.
Yeah.
It sounds like something out of a 19th century mill.
Yeah, I think what Bloodworth says in his report is that the toilets are so sparse that if you want to actually go to one, you're going to have to take quite a long walk to get there. And so obviously that poses a sort of time challenge to the people who are thinking, oh, I've got to get on with my next pick now.
It makes me think about Hertzberg when he identified the factors that motivate and demotivate, and he called one group hygiene conditions. Mm. I find this very hard to think this is happening and there's been whistleblowing about it before.
Yeah. Okay, in our third story, the government announced this week that it will take control of the East Coast Main Line, with the current franchise operated by Stagecoach and Virgin scheduled to be cancelled on the 24th of June. Transport Minister Chris Grayling told the Commons that the franchise partners had got their initial bid wrong, noting that they have lost some £200 million while struggling to meet their contracted commitments. Veteran rail author Christian Wolmar tweeted, quote, "The days of making private companies guess how many passengers there will be in 3 years' time, let alone seven, has to end," close quote. What do you think is the main leadership lesson in this story, and how do you think customers will be affected?
I can't believe that the railways are exempt from having to predict the future, like every airline does, every ferry operator does. We're all into guessing how many customers that we're going to get and then making adjustments. That's really the world of forecasting, isn't it? That's why sales forecasts are never accurate. I think the privatisation of the railways has been difficult from when it first started because of this problem with predicting numbers. And also there is no competition on many lines. The line I use to go into London, I don't have a choice of lines. I just have to go on the line that is available to me. Mm-hmm. So what was the competition really going to deliver? I think if you polled the public at the moment, they would be in favour of nationalising the railways. Why are we so different to the rest of Europe? Understand that the provision of good railways gets people and goods about, and it's vital to an economy. So I'd be quite happy if we've taken this back into essentially our control as taxpayers, and we make a reasonable fist of it, and there's no question of it going back into private ownership. Let's celebrate what we do well, and if this is one of the things that we manage to do well, great, most of all for passengers.
Okay, excellent. And finally, Bank of England Deputy Governor Ben Broadbent, who has until now been favoured to take over from Governor Mark Carney next year, ran into a hail of criticism this week for describing the UK economy as menopausal. In a Telegraph interview, Broadbent said that the word applies to economies that are, quote, past their peak and no longer so potent, close quote. TUC General Secretary Francis O'Grady called Broadbent's remarks totally inappropriate, lazy and sexist, while CBI Director General Carolyn Fairbairn said that his disappointing choice of words distracted from the real issue, namely UK productivity. Broadbent has since apologised, admitting, quote, "My use of the word menopausal conveyed ageist and sexist overtones and I should not have used it," close quote. He added that he wanted to emphasise how sorry he was for any offence caused to his colleagues at the bank. So, was this a misguided but nonetheless innocent metaphor or truly offensive?
Attitudes towards women in the workplace are not as enlightened as maybe we'd like them to be, or indeed that they should be. Mm-hmm. And it's these off-the-cuff, throwaway remarks that when you unpick them, you think, oh, is that how he thinks about the postmenopausal women in the Bank of England, that they're somehow contributing less than their male counterparts? And apologising, of course, that's a step to try putting it right, but it doesn't really cancel out where that sort of comment came from. And perhaps in some less public arenas, that wouldn't have been received with such sort of dismay. Hmm. It would have just been accepted, maybe not even commented on. So fewer and fewer people are able to make these off-the-cuff comments and then not be held to account for them. But it still doesn't really address the problem that makes them being said in the first place. And I think it's those biases that we really have to think about, which obviously now are a real challenge for the Bank of England, because, of course, that's where he works.
Yes, I think they're going to have a bit of a succession problem now, don't you think?
Yes, well, blotted his copybook is one way of describing it. Mm. But people's memories are short, and it might be argued that he's been sufficiently sorry and contrite, and therefore he's learnt from this and is a different person. And that indeed may be the case, because, of course, if people can't change, then there's no hope for any of us, is there?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, that concludes this week's episode. Listeners can find further topical content in the News and Views section of the Institute's website, which can be found at www.institutelm.com. That's www.institutelm.com. Thank you very much indeed for your insights, Kate. I look forward to exploring a new set of stories with you next week.
Thanks very much, Matt.